Hello again, everyone. Welcome to my talk. Today, I'm going to talk about how we build a data platform for our company, meetup.com, and give you a better recommendation event with Apache Foundation on cloud. So I'm going to first introduce what our platform does and the journey that we move everything on-premises and to cloud. A lot of technology that we are using, and going to talk more in breadth and just to show everyone that some of the technology that we use and different component that we use in the data platform during the pipeline, how that leverage. And I want to use this opportunity to share our more like usage architecture and also discuss with everyone here to see to communicate what's the solution and how can we improve the data pipeline for everyone. So a little bit about myself. I'm Chenji. So in Mandarin, Chenji has similar pronunciation, sounds like orange juice. So you can call me OG as well. So I am a data platform engineer at meetup.com. So I'm not belongs to like any meetup group. But I'm an engineer at meetup.com. So meetup is in New York, so living in New York area. So more interested in building scalable, reliable data infrastructure and pipeline. And also I'm a contributor to Airflow and Flink. So a little bit about meetup. People here may use meetup before. So meetup is actually founded in 2002 in New York area. So it's a platform for you to find and build the local communities. So you can think based on your areas and the people use that meetup to meet new people, learn new things, find support, and get out of their comfort zone, and maybe have something they want in their interest, and together they find different things that they want to do together, but offline. And something that Meetup's mission is about connecting people near you who are doing the similar things as you do. A famous quote that from our company is, Facebook connects you with your close friends, LinkedIn connects you with your professional contacts, and Twitter probably connects you with some celebrities, and Meetup connects you with the people near you and doing the similar things with you. So that's kind of what Meetup does. So how much data volume that we're talking about and how we are using Meetup now. So just a little bit about data volume that we have. So one number I want to point is we have 130 RSVP per minute. So something look like this. So basically we have this online RSVP kind of like web. So you can actually see like people RSVP during the real time to see what happens there. This is just a subset of the data, but just to give you an idea on how people actually join our different groups in more real time. So jumping back to the volume, we have about 350 million records generated per day. So those data include the different data sources. So we're going to talk about that later. So how the meetup platform actually works and how the group actually connect, find their members. There are two different parts in this in the meetup platform, two kind of like a different type of people. One is member, another type is group organizer. And for example, if I'm an organizer of an Apache data meetup in Las Vegas, we could have like a different event that hosted for this group. It could be like Spark. I want to have an event that tonight talking about Spark. Maybe tomorrow I want to have another event talking about Beam. As an organizer, I could host a different event on different days. So that's kind of like a basic logic behind that. And members can join different event if they join the group. And some event registration flows, what we call that RSVP flows, is if we have a new event, how the people are actually interacting with our system and how you notify those data. Basically, there are several ways, and it could be more. And user can go to our platform and do some basic research. And if you already join a group, you could receive new notifications on different new events. And you get messages from your organizer, and they probably want to post some new event. They will send you some messages and about a new event. And you could get those from your friends. And you don't have to go through the our platform. Probably some friends already told you some event that are coming on, and you probably go to the meetup and RSVP those events. So once you RSVP that, it's in our system, and it will send that to organizer. So organizer can use those data to better host those events based on the number of RSVPs, and people then show up to this event. So that's kind of like a basic flow of how people use the our platform and RSVP the event. So imagine you are a member and think about what is your next meetup looks like. Probably something more like a technical meetup, and you join that meetup and see what happens and get more insight from people's talk. And it could go to like some picnic just to have some casual talk and with some friends there. And you could have design or drawing groups there. And also there's some like a sports or outdoor event that you can go, and those are like a hiking group. And those are like more like a Lego group, and you can like go and do and create some innovation stuff there. So to members, there are two like a data points that we have collected there. One is from the member. So some members are new to the city and they want to get some recommendations from what they are interested in. So they will try to find a group or event matches their interest. And we could give some recommendations based on that information. And if they're already in any groups, they want to get some notifications on what they want to see or what they want to join. So our system will need to have some data point that provide some recommendations to those members. And similar for the organizers, if for the organizer perspective, if they want to have more members to join, they also need some data points. When they want to host any event, they want to notify their members. And also, if there are a new group that has been announced, and we also send some notifications to the member based on their interest, so they can join some new groups there. And we also do some show up predictions and notifications there. So those are like different data points that we actually collected. So some of the to make it more formalized, so we have a different data source. One is more like our Meetup classic applications. So we have a MySQL database. And also there are some behavior data, for example, user click streams and to show what they are interested in. And some activity data like application request, those data. Also we stream those data into our system. And there are some third-party data, for example, like Stripe payment and those informations, those from third-party will also need to integrate that with our system. So different data sources that come into our system. So the problem is we need to try to do some transformations and aggregations to provide more insight to the downstream consumers. So just to show one example, very simple examples to show how the data looks like. So since we're in the big data track, so I want to show some of the data, how it looks like. So just a very simple examples. Let's say just to use some non-real examples, like if I'm Harry Potter and their like event is Tri Wizard Tournament, and if we want to RSVP, and you can get some state that in the database, probably kind of like something like this. And for each of that transactions, it's going to be very simple, like each event is going to be in the database. So you kind of like store all those data in your database. And also downstream users for machine learning and analytic people want to do some queries based on this data set, so they can do different queries on top of that. This is quite simple. So later on, it will become a little bit complex than this one. So we're going to talk more on that. So the data platform overview and our solutions to give to provide more scalabilities to the data pipeline. And the goal of our platform, we are dealing with mostly internal users. Those are like machine learning, data scientist, and product manager. We do give them the data, provide more insight to them. So help them to develop and deploy those data pipelines and build reliable like APIs to help them. And also we also give like different like tunings to help them to like spark or Flink jobs that they want to run, and that we can help them to build more tools around that. So one thing that they will usually approach to us is here are some requirements that we want to do. For example, I want to schedule a data set that be kind of like a batch jobs that every 24 hours sent to us. And also I want to add a new data type or like a new column to our system. So you need to provide abilities for the use case for that. And also there are some logics behind like a backfill. This happens very often. For example, some logic the job initially applied is not right, and later on we want to do some backfill jobs to correct those data set. And also there are different frameworks that they want to use. And for example, the downstream user want to try different things like scikit-learn or like a Flink, and we need to support that as well. So those are all different requirements coming from the downstream user. Also, the challenges that we have is as the data volume increase, because more people are interested in the platform, and we got more data to store. And also, the for the product team, they want to store more information based on different behavior that a user actually have. So actually, we have more data. And also, the cost is becomes very expensive, because you have to pay the storage and you have to pay the compute for different things. And you also have to meet some SLAs. For example, every day in the morning, people would expect that the record is actually available to you by maybe like 6 a.m. in the morning. So you have to give some SLAs to the user, and so they can do their queries before they actually arrive. So and also there are some issues like data integrity, and you have different data systems, how you make sure that data is integrated. And also security is another thing. Also like different tools and frameworks people want to use. They wanted to have a different, very easy way to access those tools and frameworks. Just going back to some journey of our data platform. We call that like storming day. So before we actually move things to cloud, we have everything on premises. So it's very hard to manage, and we have our own Hadoop cluster. And the ETL pipeline we have is a Scala script, and it's scheduled by our cron jobs. And that time, it's very hard to manage all those dependencies. And also, the logic is very complex using that way, because we kind of like use the customized logic there. And those are some of the Apache tools that at that time that we use. We kind of like really start Spark really early, but it's we are running on premises. So at that time, running in Spark is sometimes is fine, but sometimes is very hard. And we could have like a downtime for our jobs for even like a week without like any data delivered to the customer, which is really bad at that time. And also Scoop, since we also needed to have all those jobs to be have all those dependencies there. So sometimes the dependencies, the data is not ready, so it's kind of like delays the data available to the user. So every day in the morning, you probably have some bad experience, especially for people who are on call. So you wake up really early in the morning and try to check what's going on, because we don't have a like really nice UI there. So user have to go to the log system and to try to find out what's the dependency there and what state is the job and what I need to re-trigger there. So it becomes very hard, especially you have to meet some SLAs there and to make sure that things are running. So people who are on call have a really bad experience on that. And then we move to some of the part of the cloud, but at that time we have two cloud. We are using both GCP and AWS. So we also have like a very difficult issues of the data transfer between one cloud and another cloud. So it's a very interesting time on that. So data pipeline, we introduced Airflow, but we are using Airflow local executor, which is also very not scalable. We're going to talk more of the Airflow later. So this is just a one thing that we did during that time. And we also enabled the streaming, some streaming events. We're using Apache Flume at that time. But one thing there is we still do a lot of like batching, like use the scoop. Every 24 hours, we send all the data from MySQL and send out the data using scoop to S3. The latency is 24 hours. So there are some requirements from the downstream user, especially for like machine learning training models. They want to have a fresher data set so they can react more quickly. So that's kind of like the thing that we need to improve. Something that we did recently, reduced the data pipeline latency. We used MySQL Bing log, kind of like a CDC. And we send out the data to Kinesis. So this is one of the things that we did. Going to talk more detail in that. We consolidate finally to one cloud, manage data in separate cloud is very challenging. And also we use Airflow on Kubernetes. This enable us to scale tasks on different like pod, and use the Kubernetes enable us to scale all the jobs very scalable, and also we have the schedule. Airflow has a single scheduler system, so Kubernetes somehow give us a kind of self-healing ability for the because the liveness probe of Kubernetes. So it, if the Airflow scheduler goes down, it can help us in that way. And also, we do some infrastructure as code, so we use Terraform, so it's easier to provision any of the cloud services there. And there are some transit during this process. For example, the team size also increased, so everyone, especially from the downstream user, that team increased, so you have to let them know how to use the system. It becomes really hard because you kind of like have to pair with everyone there, and they need to learn the system. And also the team responsibility kind of like a switch. Before we were like one people kind of like handle everything, different pipelines, and now like each person kind of like has their own familiar areas. So that's kind of like a switch during this process. And also some technical transit there. Before we are using on-premises, and now it's switched to cloud, and also we're having a lot of things on Kubernetes now. So the current architecture looks like something like this. So we have some of the stream data coming in, and also we have some transaction data from like MySQL side. And we, since we enabled the MySQL Bing log, and we use the CDC reader to send that data to Kinesis, and also we have another pipeline that handling the user behavior data, for example, like a click stream, and this goes to Flume and Kinesis. We're kind of like in the transit, try to stop using Flume. There are some maintenance issues that we want to have a manage the services of the better streaming platform like Kinesis, so that's why the switch is there. And there's also some third-party data that we use Fivetran that getting the data from like Stripe, from Jira, from GitHub, collecting all those data and send that to S3. So different users on the right-hand side, you can see actually S3 is like the data that data lake that we use, and different user actually use like Spark. They can query that data like using Hive or Presto on top of S3. So Airflow is kind of like in the middle of this process, help us to schedule and orchestrate a lot of different workflow. And also things is running on Kubernetes, so it helps you to scale a lot of the tasks there. And then we integrate with AWS Cloud. We leverage one of the Elastic MapReduce services. This gives us a very efficient way to spin up a single cluster. And so if that cluster has some problem, and we can just simply shut that down and spin up another one. So for those who are not familiar with EMR cluster, so it is very cost efficient. So you define how many node, how many like a different type of instance there, and you spin up that cluster. And also, it has the spot instance. So instead of like on-demand price, you pay some percentage of the on-demand price, but you have the vulnerability of potentially that instance has been killed. But that's kind of like a trade-off between a spot instance and on-demand. And also, it's very easy to scale. So like I said, if you need a more cluster, just go ahead and spin up there. And it has over 20 open source tools integrated, like Apache Flink, Apache Spark, all different tools are there. So it has a list of tools in their list. So all you need to do is just to select those applications, and it will help you to bootstrap that. Additionally, you can install any applications that you want using a Bootstrap script. So what I did before is we are leverage Alluxio. It's kind of like a data orchestration tools because it's not provided by EMR. And I basically write a Bootstrap script, and so you attach that. And once the EMR job is starting and is trying to use that Bootstrap script and install the dedicated software for you. So a list of the AWS EMR applications and their release, you can see it's kind of really aggressively there. And you can basically find most of the data-related applications there. And we also integrate with the Kubernetes. So most of the things is basically use the Airflow. And I don't know if people join the other talk. So it's, there are like a Spark and the Flink on the Kubernetes as well. So it's we're trying to evaluate that as well. So spot instance is another one. So we enable that on the Kubernetes cluster that we spin up in the EKS. So basically, we have some threshold on the Kubernetes cluster. For, if that is reached to that threshold, we use leverage a spot inst that can spin up additional node for us, so it can scale that way. So and also because it's a spot instance, it can save some cost there. So our, like I said, the legacy data pipeline we have is a cron job. There are several issues with that, lack of visualizations, and also state management is kind of tricky. So we used to store all the different state in a database, but you have to manage the dependency very smartly, and we're not really good at that. So there are different issues that can cause based on dependency management. And also Scala script, that we don't have like a really retry logic before, and also retry is kind of like very tricky for us at that time to implement based on the script that we have. So that's very also another thing. And also we are actually running everything on a single node, so it's not that scalable. So that's kind of like some of the legacy data pipeline process. So we then consider some open source solutions there. The consideration during that time is we can either leverage some drag and drop tools, and also another way is like using leverage like Apache Airflow or Luigi to do more coding, and so you can schedule a job that way. And people in my company actually prefer more coding and abstraction layer. So it will be, it's actually easier if you wanted to enable new operator or new functionalities. You can just create your own or like extend the base class, and you can actually leverage that in that way. And also some cost consideration there as well, because a lot of like drag and drop tools, you have to actually, it's more like a commercial tools to use. And then we use Airflow. And so there is a transit that we did before is we're running Airflow before on local executor, which is just one node. Everything is running on that node. And it's very hard once there are some jobs like data scientists write in scikit-learn, and it costs so much CPUs, and just that node goes away, which is very not scalable. And so we leverage Kubernetes in that way. Several things that I want to mention about Airflow is it has a really nice UI there. So the downstream user like that UI a lot. So basically, you can see all those dependencies in their dependency tree graph. And also, it has a Gantt chart, so you can see the how long each task actually took. It has the different things, and especially like a state management. You can actually see each task state and when they fail, and you can go back to the UI re-trigger that job very easily. So without any like coding knowledge, and even like a product manager or like anyone who don't have much exposure to the coding, and they can go to the UI and re-trigger any of the jobs. So, and also Airflow has a really good easy way to trigger like under downstream or upstream dependencies there. And then we leverage the Kubernetes executor. So basically, you can sync each task assigned to a Kubernetes pod. That is very scalable. So there are different configurations that we are doing in that way. So based on different tasks, the granularity is on task level. So for each task, you can specify how much CPU, how much memory, and also limited memory, limited CPU you want to request from the Kubernetes and give you that pod. So based on different tasks, you can smartly leverage the resource in that way. And also another great thing about using this one is because most of the Airflow code is in Python, and if you have different packages that has different version, it's kind of like a very tricky to handle, especially you want to bundle everything into one image, and that becomes very tricky. So using the Kubernetes executor, you can specify which Docker image that you want to use. So you can actually build different Docker images for different project or like different task. So people can actually leverage that to avoid some of the like different Python dependencies conflict there. And also we leverage the Kubernetes self-healing using the Leibniz probe. So basically it's like every 5 minutes we're going to check if the scheduler is still alive or not, as Airflow is one single scheduler system, so it can potentially goes away. So you have to, if that ever goes down, you have to find a way to restart that scheduler. So that's a little bit about Airflow. And after talking about Airflow, there are some customer requirements, especially from the engineer, product manager, and they want to have ability to integrate with cloud very easily, and also they want to iterate very fast. So they wanted to do less coding and without like fully understanding what's happening on the workflow orchestration side, like Airflow. and they want to do things very easily, just to focus on what they want to do without like worry about too much about external system. So that's kind of the customer requirements on that side. So what we did is we actually gave users three different abstraction layers to the user. The first one is you can actually have everything in a configuration files. So basically, I'm telling on the EMR cluster what is the resources I want and what is the cluster size and also what applications you want to install on that cluster. And once that cluster is spinned up, you can also specify what jobs you want. For example, like Hive job or like Spark jobs. There, you can specify what is the Spark artifacts there, and using Airflow basically trigger and schedule different things over there. So using this configuration files, people can just follow this way, and if they have a new things they want to add, or if they want to just remove any, alter any changes there, it's very easy. Or even like just to upgrade the version, so they just need to change that version there. So kind of using that way, so they don't have to touch the underlying code there. So that's like very high level, abstraction level. And also for the another level is people will just write DAGs for Airflow, and you can use like building functionalities there. So this is basically one of the Python operators there, and you can specify what's going on there and do different things there. And also, this is the thing that I said earlier, because it's open source, you can actually extend the functionalities there. So this is one of the things that is kind of on the low-level API on the Airflow. So we actually extend the functionalities for some of the how we spin up the cluster. So before, we don't have a ability to actually do like spot instance from the Airflow. So we are actually creating our own operators there to kind of like extend the existing functionalities and have additional abilities so based on our usage. So this is kind of like how a user actually can submit different data pipeline jobs to the system, and you can see different abstraction levels based on the user's comfortability. And after that, we send all the data to our data lake or like data warehouse, and most of the data will blend it on S3, and the user can use like Spark, Flink, Hive, or even like Athena, more like Presto. They can create those data, and also we copy some of the data set to Redshift, so like a user prefer more like a dimensional modeling that way, and they can use different like BI tools like Looker or Tableau to actually query those data. For the data serving, a lot of people now like to use Zeppelin or Jupyter Notebook. So actually most of our cluster default for now attach those Zeppelins nowadays, because it can allow people to do more ad hoc things on the cluster, so they can actually see what's going on there. That's one thing that we actually implement. And data infrastructure, like I said, Terraform that we use. There's several things that is really good. Infrastructure as code, so you don't have to manually do a lot of deployment, which is great. And also you can do like a Terraform apply or Terraform plan to see to preview the changes. So that give us less human interactions, which means it's less error prone. So and also we use Antlers to basically in the CI/CD pipeline to leverage Terraform in that way. Data monitoring and alerting, several like vendors that we are using. To skip this one. And one thing that we still have problem is, like I said, data is still 24 hours, so we needed to wait for 24 hours to get those data. So what we did is we got some batch to streaming jobs. So why we do that? There are several things. a machine learning model. That's basically one of the biggest one. And there are some low latency requirements that from the end user. For example, like A-B testing, people want to do something more in real time once the product team have some test in their production and they want to see that result right away. And so that's some of the requirements from the product team. And what we have changed, like I said, there are several things like a scoop that we use. Basically, it's a batch job and go back to the database and do some queries there. And there is we don't have history tables there. So basically, during the previous snapshot and the current snapshot, if one row has been altered more than once, so you could lose some of the history during the snapshot. That's one problem. So people want to see the full history there. Also, the latency is another thing. You have to hit the database and grab all the changes there. And there are some like process like batchings. You still do like every 1 hour. It's still like there's still some latency batching things there. Another thing that we kind of like are trying to retire is Flume. So this is mostly is because it's not managed services and there are a lot of maintenance kiosks there. So we're trying to move that to more like managed cloud services there. So there are several things that we did. First is we enabled MySQL bin log and we read that bin log and using a producer that we created. And we send that data to Kinesis, and that data we eventually landed on S3. And also, during the meantime, that we also do some data transformations using Apache Flink. More of the data transformation, like you have two streams that you want to join together, this type of data transformations. And also Spark batch jobs, since we are enabled some of the streaming jobs. So how do we do the batch? It's kind of like Lambda joins there. That's kind of the thing that we did. So going into more detail about that. So how the bin log looks like. The bin log is more like we need to have a reader to parse to understand what's going on there. So this is just one example that I showed earlier that you got those delta changes there. So we actually use a framework to actually read those bin logs and parse those. So the output format looks something like this. So, but we also add additional information, for example, like UID to make sure that we the downstream consumer can actually do some deduplications there. And you can see that we have before and after values. So if there are any updates or insert, it's actually getting the data that way. And the bin log reader, the architecture looks something like this. So basically it's a reader that reading MySQL binary log, and we actually use Dynamo to do some of the checking point and send that data to Kinesis, and there are different downstream users actually consume that data. And on the other side, like I mentioned, we're trying to replace Apache Flume, so we actually leverage a lot of AWS services. Those are like several producers actually send data to our system. So you can see that we have the Kinesis sitting there and also different data just sent to Kinesis stream and also downstream users like S3 is actually getting those data. And there's some a logic to do, like if one file is mismatched and there's some additional logic to handle that. Like I said, we are doing some of the Flink jobs to do data joins. Those basically consume data directly from the Kinesis. And we are doing some like enrichment, data enrichment there. And for Spark jobs, because data is generated 24/7, and we still like have some jobs. We still want to give more time for the data to be consumed. So we actually leverage another job to actually do some batchings there. but we also have another real-time batch actually try to union those two data sets. It's more like a kind of like a lambda way that kind of like union those two data sets, and also downstream consumer like Spark job, and also some natural language processing like data science using are actually consume those data sets. So and also attempt that we did is we try to do streaming for everything, but no strong requirements for everything. And also it's very challenges to implement because you have some upstream user that they don't give like data streams data is just not available like a stream, so it's still like a more like a batch every hour you get some data, and it's also very costly to save all the state somehow, especially you want to do some like backfill jobs. And there is very a lot of challenges to implement everything for streaming. So that's kind of like a thing that we did not like do for streaming for everything. There's still some batches jobs not running and for the user. Some lessons that we learned. So first is the data validations. So we could have data loss everywhere. So make sure that from the starting point of the implementation, have the some validation mechanism there, and especially like do some like on the source do some counter there, and also on the destination do some counter there, and make sure that you do some like reconciliations there, and having some alerting there. And if you have like two system running in parallel, make sure that don't just go once the new system is ready. Don't just terminate the old system, having those try to run in parallel for some time and maybe like redirect either old system or new system traffic to some different bucket or different path. So you have like a backup for some time until you feel very confident in the system. Adding some logins there if there like a system, one system is not working, or if there's some like a data you don't have the if the like for example like the Kinesis does not have any data for last 10 minutes, that could be some issues that you probably want to add some monitoring and alerting to the people who are on call, and also keep a deduplication process, adding like UIDs there, and just to make sure that you don't have like duplicate data there, even though some system says. Like it's exact once processing, but at some point on different system, you could still get those duplicate data there. So just having that UID somehow to as a backup, so you can have a way to actually do some data deduplications there. And cost is another thing that we learned. So cloud is very easy to provision your resources, but if we let everyone to provision their resources very frequently, so your bill goes very high. That's another thing that we learned. Do tag teams. I think a lot of AWS services actually allow you to add some taggings there. So in the bill, in the bills, you actually want to apply those for example, like different like a team, machine learning data scientist team. Add different tags so we know which team is actually cost a lot of money for that, and also monitoring if you have like one cluster that is running that is not expected, and have some mechanism either try to alert that team or like just to kill that cluster. Even though some people may not be happy, but just to save some cost of that. And spot instance is another one to save you some cost, but you have to balance the trade-off between either potentially the cluster being killed or you have like pay higher price but have the constant running cluster there. And a schema schema is another thing that we did not do well at first. Like different repository has their own schemas. We don't have a centralized schema place, and that could cause a lot of confusions, especially when you want to do some data integrations and that becomes very challenging. Like different teams are using different schema, even though they refer to the same thing. and then we leverage the central schemas and that solved a lot of problems there. And also make sure that do some have some schema evolutions and follow the format as it does. And data skills, it happens all the time. So especially on a distributed system like Spark Jobs, you will have some data skills. Basically, there are some different ways that you can deal with that. If you have like a small data set, broadcast that, or you can do some pre-processing or repartition that, or more like a data, add some sortings there, so add some randomized, so you can distribute that data more evenly. Team collaborations, just to communicate with the customer. Like I said, some customer don't want to actually do any coding, just to give them an easier way so they can actually like provision the cluster or like do their jobs efficiently, and also do some programming with the user. And all, the on-call rotations has to be easier, so otherwise it will be very challenging for people who always on-call. And also just to show more changes to the external users, what you have done, so let other users to know. And if we have like less coding changes for the downstream consumers, they will be more efficiently to do things on their own, so they can be more like an autopilot mode, so they don't have to like reach to the external team to figure out what's going on there. Yeah, that's about it. Thank you.